Hare Krishna, everyone. Salud. Thank you. So, recently, pray for the mercy of Lord Balaram. He's the super soul in our heart, and he can give us a lot of strength in our devotional service attempt. Today I thought I would reiterate a celebration that went on in the United States about a month ago. And that was Independence Day, 4th of July, although we didn't get really to celebrate here as well. But, well, that's the day when we're victorious in reaching the independence of the United States. And they made a declaration of that written down and talking about with this independence and this freedom. Now everyone is going to be able to pursue happiness. And this is the big declaration of this victory after fighting for so many years. The French were very impressed with this. At the time, right after this occurred in Europe, the French were not very pleased with their situation, their leaders, and so they were kind of happy with what we had done. And they gave a gift to the United States of the Statue of Liberty. And was hoping to encourage them to do the same. And of course, we all know it's up there in New York. And in one of the, it's actually the goddess, it's a Roman goddess, the goddess of freedom. That's who it's named after. And in her hand, she holds the Declaration of Independence. And this professes equality for everyone in the country. The possibility of happiness. So this is quite a declaration, and but still there are fresh cries of I want freedom, I want equality. It's still going on, right? Still happening, fresh in the newspaper every day. So this has been going on a long time. Actually, we go all the way back to whenever. In the spiritual world, the Supreme Lord gave us all a slight bit of independence, and we were very, very pleased just serving him and making that choice and being very happy serving him. But that little independence is sitting there. Kind of reminds me of the Ram story when Krishna got that boon for helping Dhritarashtra, and she kind of held on to it for a long time, and at the right time, she said, all right, this is what I want now. So at some point, it was just the right time, and we said, Krishna, I declare to you that I want my independence from you. I want to be the supreme enjoyer, and I really don't need you in the picture. And so he goes, so be it. And so this was our first declaration of independence in a great mystique, because we were thrown down here. for our exclusive enjoyment, we are thrown into this material world, which is very much like a prison house. And I'm sure we're, first of all, we're put in the confines of the womb of a mother, very uncomfortable situation. And if you ever see pictures of them, they're squirming, they're upset, they're anxious, and rambunctious. And then the first thing they do is they cry when they come out. Oh my gosh, here I am. Right? And then they struggle through the youth, but they're always thinking, I might be temporarily dependent on this and that, but I'll be independent soon when I get that driver's license, right? That's the first mark of independence. My granddaughter just got hers, so she's like, yeah, now where's my car to go with it, right? And can any of you remember that feeling of getting your driver's license? And then the feeling of your first driver's ticket, remember? Wow, I have to pay for it. I'm actually responsible. So with independence, there is responsibility. And so the teenager, or the so-called independent youth, mature person, all of a sudden finds himself free and independent as long as he has money. And then as soon as he has that money, then he has to get a job, he has duties, he has family, this, that, bound. Not independent, not a free person. But he's always thinking, when I get older, when it's time to retire, then I'm going to be free. All the kids will be put away, my debts are done, my house is paid for, I'll be free. And then what happens? The body doesn't work right? You go to do some sports, no way, can't do it anymore. Right? And then there's disease, death lingering, failing memory, so many different things. So that dream of independence, the whole lifetime, it just doesn't ever happen. And we're thinking that, in the future I will enjoy. So are we enjoying yet? Not really. But we have a promise that we will, and we have that pursuit that we can still keep trying. So this is very much like a prison. I worked in a prison one time. I didn't work, but I preached in a jail here. And it rang a lot of bells. It reminded me of being in this material world, that you're very much restricted. Although you want to be free, you're very, very much restricted. So there's this very nice song by Bafino Thakur, which kind of describes the situation. O fish-like soul, why have you fallen into the entangling nets of Maya? You have not understood that by being bound up by those nets, you will have to remain in this material world for a long, long time. After becoming a captive in Maya's snare due to your desires for very insignificant enjoyments, you remain transformed in a spiritually diseased condition, punishable, just like a disobedient servant. Now, by the power of devotional service, always remain subservient to Lord Krishna, swimming and frolicking freely in the nectary ocean of Krishna prana. So this is a different kind of freedom that the devotee actually begins to experience and becomes aware of. Becomes aware that all those other desires for enjoyment were simply flickering, insignificant, urges of this material body. In this description of the fish net, I may have told the story before, but I can't resist telling it because it's so perfect for this. I was in my first year, 1975. I guess I was 25 years old. And so a bunch of ladies decided to swim across the Saraswati to go to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. So we thought, that's not very far, so we'll swim across. So no problem. I think Malati led the way and a bunch of other ladies. And it just so happened that when I arrived in Mayapur, all the Bengali ladies told me that I wasn't looking proper. That I was married, I should have the red bangles and the white bangles, and I should have this, and I should have that, and I should, all these different things. And the ankle bells, so I went and bought ankle bells. And I bought some nice heavy duty ones with lots of bells, and you know, when I'm 25, I thought, yeah, everyone will be able to hear me when I come to that temple, I'm gonna enjoy. And so while I was swimming across the Jhongi, all of a sudden, my ankle bells got caught on fishing nets. I don't know if you've ever done that before. There's fishing nets all over. And so there I am, trying to swim across in my, you know, they go around like this, all the bells, and my fishing net, I'm on there, and I'm going, what a fool I am. I think I'm going to enjoy, and here I'm caught, you know, I'm caught with this idea of enjoying. So I just kind of have that, like, rip it apart. It's hard, you know, fishing line is really tough. And I rip it across, and I didn't have any trouble, you know, drowning or anything. It was just a big snare, big binding. And so I didn't bother to buy anymore. And it all turned green anyway, because they really weren't silver. So that was a good lesson for myself. And it should be our lesson that there are snares, mayas out there to snare you. And the only real remedy is this devotional service. We have, somehow or other, we have this conception that everything is mine and it's for my enjoyment. But the Sri Upanishad, the first invocation, explains that everything is owned and controlled by the Lord. And that we should just understand who's the controller. We should just take what we need. That's all. Just take our quota. And then we would be very happy. So this, we have to understand, really, whose property this is. And then if we take it, then if you take someone else's property, you are a thief, and you deserve to go to prison, right? So the only way out is, for us, really, is to be very remorseful and to ask the Lord to please start accepting everything back. Let's give everything back to him so that we can get free and engage in this other type of service of serving Krishna, begging him to keep us on a whole different platform of consciousness. And the Nectar Devotion describes one of the first experiences one has as a devotee is that they feel a relief from all these material miseries. And it's true. Everyone can remember when they first turned the moon and washed the pots or made the garland or whatever, you felt, wow, I'm just free to now just serve Krishna. Even if it's a tedious thing, it's just so enjoyable doing the service. So this fresh attitude of serving Krishna is pleases Krishna, and in turn, we receive that pleasure. So there are many, many choices we have because of that little bit of freedom. And we can choose to accept the service of Krishna or be corrected, or we can be in jail for a very long time. When I worked in the jail, there were three different colors that the people wore. One was orange, and those are the people that were in there. They did some stupid thing, and they it's like a mix of modes here in the material world. And then there's the ones that were white, and they have a little bit of freedom. They don't have to be washed every minute. They can fold the laundry or clean the bathrooms or something like that. So that's kind of like the mode of goodness. People are, I want to correct myself a little bit. And then there were the people that were in red, and those were very angry people. And they always were with somebody, they always had their hands tied. And these are the people that they said, I'll keep you away from, because they can do some damage. So those are like the mode of ignorance. Those persons are just, they're angry here in the material world, and they're just living out their sentence, and they'll be back in as soon as they're out. Back into another, into this material world. And then there's some that really misbehave, even in the prison. They might do some damage to the prison, and they get in solitude confinement, lockdown. Does that ring a bell? Look at all of us right now. We're all gagged, right? We're in lockdown. We can't really associate normally. So we should be embarrassed that we're in prison, that we have offended Lord Krishna, and now we're paying for it. And such a comic reaction, you know, misbehaving in the Lord's creation here, destroying it, misusing it, not using it for Krishna, not doing yajna, so many things. And therefore, we're suffering now. So there is the elite prison for those who are kind of good, you know, that are their better class of person, and they have less restrictions. But Brahmana Buddha Loka, it's even the demigods, higher planets, suffering. They're more likely to fall down and start all over again because there's even more enjoyment there. So this is a really, it's not a good situation to be choosing to be here in this material world. But if you desire to be corrected, then Krishna becomes your lawyer. And you can work with him. He wants to help you. And so he gets you a parole officer, right? He gets you a spiritual master. And he says, yes, he will guide you out of here. Just stick with him. Follow his instructions. And you'll make it out. And sometimes, in certain parole, you have to put a little anklet thing on your leg so they can watch you real closely in case you don't go out of county and things like that, right? They have those things where they detect you. So the spiritual master, the vows of the spiritual master are like that. Don't deviate, or I'll know that, right? The spiritual master is also representing the super soul. So therefore, our vows help us. They restrict us even more. And of course, the spiritual master introduces us to the four principles of freedom, which are eating fish and meat, and no intoxication, no gambling, no intoxication, right? What's it say? Yeah. So these are some restrictions that the spiritual master gives us for a good reason, because they will free us. They will allow us to control our senses, control our mind, and begin to delve into the spiritual realm where we come in contact with Krishna. And there's some purifying effect that is so mystical that our spiritual senses can become enlivened again. So this is a nice verse from our lawyer, Lord Krishna. And says, but those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So down at the bottom of the purport, it says, by the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Shama refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga, and when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable condition of life. Krishna really is helping us. Lord Balaram is really helping us. Srila Prabhupada is really trying to help us get out of this prison. So it's up to us to really choose that direction to go in. Otherwise, it can be a long time, a long, long time before we get back there. So Krishna also has his declaration. 931, he says, he quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace. O son of Kunti, declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. So the spirit soul can go back and be free from this birth and death. Even if you fall down, Krishna's there, you're always there to pick you up. The parole officer will get you back in line, and we can eternally be happy, not this just a pursuit of happiness. But recently, we find that people are willing to hear these instructions, and all they do is want this freedom, and they're simply shouting so loud that they can't even hear any good instructions. They're wanting their freedom. They want their freedom of choice, right? I want the choice to have my sex life and to kill my child. They don't want the responsibility. Such selfishness. This is how what God is here in this material world. It's an extreme case, but it's true. They're very, very selfish. That I just want to enjoy, but I don't want the responsibility. So this is the choice they want. Karma gives you no choice. The results are very, very heavy. And there's no freedom at all for a very long time. And then there's cries also, you see in the newspapers and everything, cries for equality against racism, which the Statue of Liberty was declaring. And it said it was self-evident that we're all equal. I guess we've got some real blinders on our eyes or something, because it's not very self-evident for many people. But according to Krishna, his evidence is there in the Gita that we're all equal. And the humble sage, the purified person, will see that, yes, that soul is equal, and we all have the equal right to become free. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he had to fight against the caste system, which was on the same level, so that everyone could engage in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada also, he had to fight. He had to fight that women could become disciples and can live in the temples and can do deity worship, and that Americans can go to India and have temples, and so many things Prabhupada fought for. Because he understood the real equality of the soul. And this takes exceptional consciousness. And there's a very nice story about such an elevated person with that consciousness. And this was the king of the world at one time. His name was Bharat Maharaj. And he cared about his citizens, and he cared that they all were elevated gradually to the point of pure devotion, or at least devotional service. And he gave them that equality in different ways. And everyone, all the citizens were very happy with it. They were pleased with the whole situation. And he was so elevated, he understood all about Dharma. And when it came to the time, he left home and went to the forest and went in meditation. And the story goes that he didn't go to an ashram with other like-minded persons, but he went by himself. And he was meditating, and then, of course, there was a deer that needed to be saved, a small little baby deer, and he took it in out of his good heart, but he became very attached to it, so much attached that he began to lose his meditation, his focus on serving Krishna. And this led to, at the time of death, he was thinking of the deer, and the next lifetime he became a deer. And then he was given the benediction by Krishna to remember that lifetime, and he went right to the hermitage, right where that he should have gone in the first place, and he really just stayed there and ate the remnants of the devotees, and he didn't have any other association, and after that lifetime, he was elevated to a Brahmin family. And he said, I'm not getting involved again. I'm just going to pretend like I'm dumb. And he was a very simple person. And he was made fun of by his brothers and family members. And ultimately, he was given the position of a palanquin person for the king, King Rahuga. And he was one day doing his service, but he was not doing a perfect job because he was giving them a bumpy ride, because there were ants and he didn't want to step on the ants. He saw that these are living entities, I don't want to hurt them if I don't have to. And so when the king realized who it was that was causing this, he got down from the chariot and began to be very nasty to Bart. And he actually had a reputation of not treating the citizens so nicely. Although he was a Rajarshi, but he was in this position now of such a master that he misused it and made fun of Maharaj. And Bart, being once a king, saw this consciousness, and he said, I need to correct this person. This is not proper. So he spoke. And he spoke the eloquent message of that we are Nazis' bodies. You might be my master this lifetime, and I might be your servant. But next lifetime, I might be the master, and you might be my servant. He says that we all come together like little straws. We just float together, and then we float away, and it's all very temporary. And it's all by the will of the Lord. So he gave very good instructions of how he should understand that everyone is the spirit soul, and that they should be treated thusly, and given an opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. So a devotee, he sees that, and another such devotee who actually made the planet like heaven. One really cares about the citizens and engages them in that proper way. The planet can actually pop up as like heaven. He says, but if the government doesn't see that, then it can become like hell, as we have kind of seen in the recent years, that it's not really desirable. People are not satisfied. But there is another great devotee, very qualified leader, a long time ago. And he was a minister to King Dhritarashtra. His name was Vidura. And he wanted to see, he had a job kind of to see who's going to be the next king. So he saw Duryodhan, and then he saw Yudhisthira, and trying to see who's qualified, who's going to really take care of the citizens and give them this advancement in spiritual life. Who's going to help them get liberated and free? And so he made a little request that they come and meet in a council house. And he says, okay, now I want you both to become judges. I have these four men here, and they came in. So they're all murderers. They all committed murder. Duryodhan, give your judgment to these four. And Duryodhan said, all should be killed. Someone who murders, their life should be taken. All four of them, killed. And then he asked Yudhisthira, so, what do you say, Yudhisthira? And he says, first of all, let me ask a question. What caste are they from? And one happened to be from Brahmin, another from Vaishya, another from Shudra and Kshatriya. And he said, therefore, he gave the first Sudra, he said, I give him 4 years of imprisonment. And everyone's like, whoa, just 4 years for killing someone? He goes, yes, because Sudras, they're not as intelligent, and they don't really understand so much at such a high level. So they have to learn their lessons, so 4 years of imprisonment will teach them. And then the Vaishya, he said, their punishment, they know more. So they should get 2 times what the Sudra has. That should be their punishment. They should be chastised stricter. And then the Kshatriya, and the Vidura said, he knows so much, and he has that position, but he's murdered, therefore he should take 2 times what the Vaishya has. But he can't be killed because it will become unsafe if we don't have kshatriyas for the rest of the citizens. So he was thinking of the citizens and thinking how he could chastise, making very important judgments. And then for the Brahmin, he said they're very well versed. He's very well versed in all the scriptures. He knows what to do, what not to do. Therefore, he should have the most severe punishment. But we cannot kill a Brahmin. So therefore he gave him a very heavy punishment. So this kind of a king sees the real benefit and equality, not only materially but spiritually both. So that the whole society benefits and that each individual can have that opportunity to advance. So this is what a great leader. This is how this really should be seen as really quality, and giving them the freedom to again engage in devotional service. So we have a freedom to choose at every second, really, if we want to serve Krishna or not. We have opportunities online, we have opportunities out there, all kinds of enjoyment and everything. We have choice every second. We can choose if it's going to be favorable or disfavorable. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes through the whole Bhagavad Gita and gives us such nice instructions of what to do and what not to do. And at the end he says, so now it's your choice. You can do what you want. Still that little bit of independence, that little bit of freedom is there at all times. And so therefore, we can do as we like. But having this knowledge now, Srila Prabhupada has given us everything. So if you make a bad choice now, it's not going to be good. These great saints and sages have written songs saying, I'm not even attracted to this movement, and it's just like I'm drinking poison. I'm not surrendered, I might as well commit suicide. So we have the greatest thing, and where there's really no acceptable excuse that there is, that we don't surrender in this lifetime. We can be free. If we surrender, then we're free from this cycle of birth and death. So then all of our problems are solved. So until then, we have to become more convinced. And Balaram will definitely help us in that regard. Otherwise, we can stick around in Kali Yuga. Who knows what the next generation will look like? Maybe they'll have a whole one of those suits on. What do you call those kind of suits? Hazmat suit. Who knows? We have to cry out. We have to declare to Krishna, "Oh Lord, please engage me in your loving service at every moment." And we do it thousands of times a day. We do it, but we have to really mean it. You can't just profess, engage in your service, and then someone asks you to help with it, do something for the Balaram's appearance, say, oh, no, I shouldn't, can you give a date? I should, no, not really. Can you wash that? No, not really. We have to cry out, and we have to really mean it, that we'll surrender everything in this lifetime. Prabhupada says, it's a 24-hour service that we have. So serving our bodies, getting enough sleep and not too much sleep. Prabhupada, he's given us the whole gamut of how we can get out of this prison. So it is our choice. And let's encourage each other to make that choice. We can push people forward to Krishna. We can also draw them back, just in our daily conversation or in our association. So we have to realize that a whole community, community like this can really help everybody move closer to the ultimate goal of pleasing the Supreme Lord and freeing us. And at the same time, we can go and free so many other people too, at least given that opportunity to choose. Many people will just don't think about it, but we can. We have to show that this is a much better choice. Here we are living in such a nice, beautiful place, enjoying the association of Krishna glories. So, anyone have any questions or doubts or problems?
I remember Srila Prabhupada put in one purport of Jarabhar that he gave a nice lesson. But Prabhupada said that if devotees don't remember two things, then they will do the same mistake Jarabhar did. He said, number one is where we come from, we should remember always. And second is, if we don't go back home, back to Godhead, we're not attached to Krishna, we will be attached to something else and it will take us away from Krishna. And that's what the mistake of Prabhupada did. He was merciful to the deer, but he was not merciful to himself.
Yeah, sometimes you have to be merciful at home first, and then you'll have the strength to be merciful. So, yeah, we have to do our job in the morning. We have to replenish our consciousness so that our consciousness will help other people. So, yeah, we have a lot of work at home to do. Now we're at home a lot more, so we can make that much more advancement. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you, Madhavi, for the good class. In that story that you mentioned that from the four different ashrams, what was the punishment given to the Brahmana?
Vaishya?
Yeah, you said Brahman. What was the punishment given to Brahman?
It was the most severe. I don't know exactly what it was, but I'm sure it was many more times than any other.
But he was not killed.
They couldn't. You can't kill a Brahman. Otherwise, you are implicated. So he gave him the most severe.
Because he knew.
Because he knew better. And now we know better. There's no excuse for ourselves. I mean, to go back out there and to fall down and not do these four principles, you know we're going to get it. I was thinking that I used to do like the water ski a lot when I was a carman, and I thought that if I ever got an example, an opportunity to go water skiing again, Krishna would probably kill me, you know, just because you stupid doing this, you know. Actually, there is a story of one devotee in Miami. He was a surfer, and he went out, and he just kind of fell in line one day. He went up to Fort Lauderdale and went out surfing, and lo and behold, a shark came by, bit his surfboard right behind him. And he went in, went back to the top really fast. So this is Krishna says, aquatic side of the shark. So, yeah, don't want to mess around anymore, because it could be very severe. And so best we dot our I's and cross our T's and do everything Prabhupada said and not mess up. It's too risky.
So you mean to say we shouldn't be doing any kind of water sport even if it's within the boundaries of our house?
There's water. Lord Chaitanya had water sports, no problem, with other devotees. That's okay. But if you're out there just for your own sense gratification, you could do something insignificant, nothing too serious. Especially competitive things are not too healthy. Competitive sports, Prabhupada does encourage. Sports, yes, we all need exercise and sun and good health. We have to be careful of our attachments because they're still there. You know, we might hold them back and hopefully Krishna will help dissolve them in time, but the attachments can surface very easily. And there are stories of devotees that just, you know, some old friend knew of their attachment and said, oh, well, why don't we just go? And then they're gone. So we don't want that to happen. Krishna will protect us. We remind ourselves of the instructions every day. That's why Mangala Arti, Mangala Chari, all the prayers and the worship of the Guru, is to remind us every single day. We can't miss a day without it. Otherwise, it's so easy to forget of who we are and what we're supposed to be doing.
I have one question.
Jara Bharatiya is his brother, who are also kind of not treating him good.
Yeah, they were Shobhara brothers.
Right. But his father was very kind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those bandito or dakaites that wanted to kill him or offer him to kill him, they are so mean. How come he never chose to teach any one of those? He chose Rahul. Is there some key point? Like what caused King Rahugunath, the recipient of knowledge.
He knew that King Rahugunath was a good king. He knew he was intelligent, otherwise he wouldn't be a man of Rajarshi like that. So the king, when he first heard it, he didn't question him anymore. He just stopped and listened. He could recognize, yeah. But when you get dacoits and things like that, you can't preach to them. They won't listen. But King Rahugunath was on a level where he had previous Krishna consciousness and he listened. And therefore he became his disciple immediately. So, even I think it's in the Ten Offenses that it's best not to preach to non-devotees so much that we have to be a little bit picky in some ways. Tamal Krishnaprasad said, if they take prasadam and they see their plates are empty, then you know you can sit down and talk to them.
Oh, what about some relative in the family, like his father was nice? He could have preached to him also, I guess. I don't know, maybe his son can have preached to father or something.
His father preached like anything to him, but he didn't want to have anything to do with it. He just didn't want to go there. He already knew it anyway. So I'm sure his father benefited in the end because he raised two devotees, and I'm sure he learned a lot of tolerance. Yeah, this was his opportunity to get out. And he didn't waste any time.
Thank you.
Shri Prabhupada.
One more question.
Well, not a question, just a comment about Prabhupada's question. And I was thinking also, as far as King Rahugunath, he was a king. So if you're going to preach to someone, that would be the most important person to preach to,
yeah.
Because, you know, as Krishna says, what a great man does, everyone will follow. So better to preach to him, and that would be like preaching to millions of others.
And I'm sure it really changed him. He became a disciple. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, Shivapa, what he wrote to Indira Gandhi, he wrote to all the heads of everyone. He tried his hardest, you know. No, he didn't. He went right to the top. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
It's not
sad, right?
No.
Okay.